Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what vegetable did Converso Jews bring to America in the 16th century, and why? Reina Perez Simnagar was born in Venezuela and raised as a Catholic. It was only when she began to question some of her family's strange customs that she learned she was a descendant of Conversos, Jews who had fled the Spanish Inquisition for America in the 16th century. She went to study in the United States, where she converted to Judaism and met her future husband, an Iranian Jew. Reina learned to cook Persian Jewish food from her future mother-in-law and has written a cookbook, Persian Food from the Non-Persian Bride, which is full of interesting anecdotes as well as recipes. She also has a blog and YouTube channel. Reina spoke with us about her unusual background and her journey back to Judaism.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Reina. Could you tell us first about your life in Venezuela? Are you from Caracas originally?
I am. I actually was born in Caracas, and lovely, lovely times, those times, you know, some time ago. Venezuela was a wonderful place to grow up, really safe, just wonderful. Like one of those places where people wanted to go for vacation, very wealthy, very well kept. So yeah, it was fantastic childhood. I was born in Caracas. Yeah.
And you were raised very Catholic.
Yes, I was raised pretty religious Catholic, and I went to Catholic school my whole life. So yeah, Christmas, the whole shebang. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about how you discovered your Jewish roots, because you said in the Spanish interview that you did for Radio Sefarad, you said that your family, part of your family anyway, lived in a Jewish neighborhood, but you didn't know that it was Jewish and that you didn't know that Jews even existed until you were 12. So, I mean, how did you discover your Jewish roots?
So what happened was that I always thought my father's side of the family was a little peculiar. They did things in a very strange way that I just almost kind of, I was kind of embarrassed, to be honest with you, for my friends to find out. They did quirky things. And one day, it was a Saturday, we were going to visit my grandfather. He lived in this area, this city called San Bernardino, which is, you know, a suburb of Caracas. And we were driving there, and I looked at the window, and I see this building with a lot of people dressed in black coats and black hats coming out. And I was like, wow, it looked like a little bit like a funeral because everyone was wearing black. And I asked my dad, and I said, Dad, what is that? Are these people in a massive funeral? What is this? And he said, no, those are Jews. And I was like, Jews? Like, you mean from the Old Testament? And he's like, yes, Reina, where have you been? Jews from the Old Testament. I was like, Jesus kind of Jews? Like, I didn't know that they were still around. Like, these people are resilient. I can't believe it. I really couldn't believe it.
Well, it's true. And, I mean, we are resilient.
Yes. Yes, we are. And so it was really, really close, like a few blocks away from my grandfather's house. And at that time, my grandfather was an elder man, and my Aunt Sarah took care of him. And when I got there, I asked her and I said to her, you know that you like live too close, two blocks away from the Jews? And she was like, of course, I know that we live. Is this a Jewish neighborhood? I was like, what does this even mean? I didn't realize any of this stuff. I just didn't know. I was 12 at the time.
Well, when you were going to Catholic school, did they tell you anything about the Jews? I mean, were they negative things that they told you about the Jews?
No, which is very, very interesting. In fact, it was not at all negative whatsoever. Whenever they talked about the Jews, they talked about it as the people from the past, as the people where Jesus came from, and you know, and then just like an Old Testament kind of thing, where like completely like from. That's why I didn't realize that Jews still existed, because it sounded to me that we're like long gone people. We never talked about the Holocaust, never talked about the Inquisition, never talked about anything that Jews really ever went through, ever, never, and never ever came up. Never. It was like they were gone. Mm-hmm. It was like the Jews never existed.
So what did they tell you when you asked?
So when I asked my aunt, she pulled me aside and she said to me, she said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 12. And she said, well, we really need to talk. And I thought I was in trouble. So I was like, you know, whatever broke, I didn't break it. I promise you. And she's like, no, honey, don't worry. It's not about that. She's like, you need to understand, like, you need to know our past. You need to know our family. She said, then she started telling me how our family came from Spain. And she said that we were converso Jews that came from Spain, and that our last name was Perez with an S, and then we changed it. And we went from Cordoba to the Canary Islands, from the Canary Islands to Venezuela, and we've been there ever since. And I was flabbergasted because I didn't know any of this. I mean, I knew our family was weird.
Well, what were some of these weird things that they were doing?
They were doing things like, for example, my grandmother was obsessed with eggplants. So she would put eggplants in everything, including dessert, which is really strange. An eggplant cake is like really weird. And eggplant is not a native South American vegetable whatsoever. You know, if you told me plantains, if you told me mango or yuca, but eggplants, I mean, completely non-South American. And later on, when I started learning about converso Jews, I actually learned that it was the Jewish people, the converso Jews, that brought eggplants in those big ships, pirate ships and all that, to the Americas with them. And like, because it was one of those vegetables that they just couldn't part from. And they started plantations of eggplants in South America. And I was like, that's why my family loves eggplants so much. I mean, that's not as weird as the fact that they did things like, for example, whenever we go to the cemetery, they would make us hunt for rocks. My dad would make us go for a rock hunt to put it on the grave, on the graves of our, you know, our family members. And I was so, I didn't understand why we did that. Because if you think about it, everyone buys flowers. And that's just such a beautiful thing to decorate somebody's, you know, grave. And the cemetery looks like this beautiful, like, garden full of flowers. And then there were our family members with rocks on their graves. And I felt like it was so disrespectful, first of all. And I felt that we were just so cheap. Why don't we just buy flowers? And it's very hard to find rocks in a beautifully manicured cemetery, as you can imagine. So sometimes we would bring rocks from the fish tank from home. But yeah, things like that were very strange. So things like, for example, my grandmother used to like light candles Fridays when we go visit her. And she didn't know why. And I didn't know why. Nobody knew why. That was just something that she did. My grandfather would read the newspaper from back to front, like you would read Hebrew. Everyone in the family had Jewish names. Sarah, Leoncio, which means, Ariel, basically. All kinds of like Jewish names, that Old Testament names that people, which is not fashionable anymore to have. And then they kept on repeating the same names throughout the family. And then also they had this thing where like my grandfather had like a chapel in his house. Nobody has a chapel in their house in Venezuela. It was a very, very big house that he had. In fact, when he sold that house, later on became an embassy. That's how big it was in San Bernardino. And then he had a chapel built in the house. So they would have mass in this chapel on Sundays. And it was not really mass. One of my father's uncles became, quote unquote, a priest, but he wasn't really quite ordained, and he wasn't really quite, you know, not married. Like, he had a few ladies here and there and a few kids. It was really strange. I mean, whenever we would go, we got get together for a quote unquote mass, it would just not be mass. It would just be family reunion and stuff like that. So, and in this room, there were not really any Christian, you know, can I say symbols? It was completely, it was just like a chapel. You could tell that it was a chapel, but it was not a Christian thing. It was like a very strange situation. And that's where my grandmother was. Her funeral was in this chapel. And then one thing that happened that was very strange is when my grandmother passed away when I was around 10, 11 years old, after everyone left, you know, we went to her and we cut a piece of hair from her. She was already, you know, dead, and we cut a piece of her. And then we walked to the kitchen, and there was a closet adjacent to the kitchen. And inside of that closet, when they opened that closet, they would see a lot of, it was like Hogwarts, like that movie, Harry Potter, where all the paintings were in the walls really close to each other. So his closet was like just like that, full of paintings, or what it looked like paintings, really close to each other. And she was an artist. So I thought it was her paintings. And when I got closer, I asked my dad, what is this? These are not paintings. These were like 3D models of like graves with hair. So my father told me, this is, you know, when somebody in the family passes away, we cut their hair and we make a depiction of their grave and we put it in this closet. This is basically, it's like a memoriam for our family.
I never heard of anything like that being Jewish.
No, because it wasn't. It wasn't. It was more like you have to, a lot of people don't know that Converso Jews, crypto Jews, or Marano Jews, this is not real the Judaism that you and I know of modern Judaism today, where we have certain holidays. They almost made their own quote unquote religion, where Purim became a fast day because Queen Esther fasted, where, you know, Hanukkah, the Hanukkiah was lit in the basement, things like that. It's not like the religion, the Jewish religion that we know. It's a completely new, different strand of Judaism that people, a lot of people practice today that is not quote unquote your typical Judaism, but it's like they made up their own rules. So what happened is hair in Judaism is erva, which is something that's very, very, it's like nakedness. It's like the essence of a person's body. So this closet full of my family members' hair was almost like their Jewish cemetery. We became their Jewish mausoleum. Wow. If you know what I mean. The depictions of these paintings were very much Victorian. Victorian people used to do in the Victorian era times, they used to make, they used to take the people's hairs and they used to make into paintings and using their hair. And you can see that in Asia Torah, wrote an article about my family and the picture of one of these paintings is in the article. If you search my name on h.com, you can mm-hmm. find it. And you can see that there's no Christian motif whatsoever in the paintings. And then all this closet was full of all the family members with the day they were born and the day they departed. And that became what my family did. That was just basically their connection. That became the little Jewish mausoleum. You know what I mean? Like they did their own little things here and there that not every family necessarily did. And that everybody just had certain things that they kept on. That was basically what the link to the past for them was, that little quirky thing that they kept.
Something I don't understand, though, is that since there was a relatively large Jewish community in Caracas and it wasn't really a problem, why didn't they tell you before? Why didn't they come out of the closet?
So what happened were a few things. I asked a lot of my family members about that. And even today, I wonder how come none of you have converted, because I was the only person that converted. So there are a few things. The Inquisition followed the Jews to the Americas until mid-1800s. The last person that was hung was 1832. I know that sounds like a long time ago, but that's really not so long ago. So they were quite scared, first of all. Second of all, they were hidden for so long that the whole Jewish thing became almost like a myth, a thing of tales. They didn't really consider themselves Jewish per se. They just considered themselves Jewish from a certain extent, from a certain origin. And they actually practiced a lot of Christian, you know, things. And they felt pretty comfortable with being quote unquote Catholic or Christian, and just knowing that they came directly from Jews. And they didn't have this like yearning to go back to the Jewish community because they lived a fine life. They were completely cool. And then you would marry into the family and all of a sudden you would be like, yeah, by the way, we come from Jews from Spain. How cool is that? And that's where it ended. And that kind of kept on going from generation to generation to generation until it got to me. And I was like, well, that's really cool that we come from Jews from Spain and we have all these really, weird things that we do in our family, but this is where it's going to end because guess what? Everyone's leaving Venezuela. Our family is not as little as it used to be anymore. And it's going to end. Yeah, this is where it's going to end. And I felt like I wanted to have a deeper connection to the past, a deeper connection to, you know, what made me, you know, quasi-Jewish at that point. And also because I started learning more about Judaism and I found it to be fascinating. And it's just like it became almost like this incredible quest for me. It wasn't anymore about, oh yeah, how cool is that? I come from Jews, which is what, if you ask my cousins today, they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, one of my cousins even tried to convert into Judaism in Madrid. He lives in Madrid today. Oh. And and he's like, you know what? It was very difficult. It was hard and it just didn't work out, you know? And it is very difficult to convert to Judaism. It took me 3 years. I don't blame any of them for not, you know, wanting to like go through a complete change in their lives. It takes a huge commitment to do that. So did they have a need? They didn't even know what davening was. My grandfather had a talit that he used to wrap around himself and sway back and forth. he didn't know why he did that. He just knows that his grandfather did that. Wow. So he felt a connection with his grandfather, a connection with the past. And he knew that he had to some sort of do a prayer with it. But he wasn't that like curiosity, like that yearning of like, why I'm doing this wasn't there. I don't know why. Hmm. It just wasn't there. The need of belonging to the Jewish community wasn't there.
Let's talk a little bit about when you moved to the United States. Why did you go and how old were you at the time?
I came to the States when I was almost 18. Yeah, almost 18. I was just 17. And I came to go to school. I came to learn English. I was going to school in Venezuela. I was doing chemical engineering. And I wasn't crazy about it. My dad, you know, I felt that that was a very good, you know, career for me to have. I wasn't crazy about it. So I decided to come to the States and study English. And I also came to the States because when I was in school, I went to a school called Universidad Metropolitana, which is a university in Caracas where a lot of Jews go to. And I ended up having a lot of Jewish friends in this university. And I told them, all of them, my story. And they said, well, that's really, really cool. And I said to them, yeah, you know what? And I really want to convert to Judaism. I've been wanting to convert to Judaism since I was 16. And they said to me, well, in America, you should go to America. It's very easy to become a Jew in America because it was very hard. I actually tried to become Jewish in Venezuela and it didn't work out. They made it very difficult for me. And I also was very young and you can't really do an Orthodox conversion, which is what I wanted to do at the age of 18 until you're 18. And I was 16. Mm-hmm. So my parents brought me to speak to a rabbi. And, you know, the rabbis are supposed to, you know, discourage you about three times. And we didn't know any of this. And my parents were not happy with the discouragement and all that. They're like, what do you mean? We come from Jews. They felt like, what's wrong with you? Like, how come you don't want to just take her? Like, why does she even have to go to conversion?
So then your parents didn't object.
So my dad's side of the family, obviously my dad didn't object at all. My mom is amazing. Like, she was just really like, do you think this is going to make you happy? If you think this is going to make you happy, I'm supportive. I understand that, you know, you come from Jewish people. So I totally supported it, even though I sent you to Catholic school my whole life, you know, your whole life. And we pay for very expensive tuition. But if this is what's going to make you happy, we support you and whatever you want to do. So my parents are really, really cool. My extended family, especially my mom's side, it was a little bit harder for them. And I think it's still hard for them today because they're very, you know, very attached to Christianity. But all things taken into consideration, my family is extremely kind and moderate and very, very tolerant of all the changes that I've made with my life. And I couldn't ask for a better family to have ever done this. They're just incredible to me. My sisters are amazing. Everyone's super respectful. Like, I wish I could give you some really juicy stuff on that, yeah. But I'm just telling you, like, I'm the luckiest girl.
No.
Like, a lot of my friends who have gone through conversions, they've gone through hell with their families.
Yeah.
And it's just very difficult. And I lucked out. Mm-hmm. I lucked out.
So tell us how you met your husband.
So I was working in Taco Bell on campus in UCLA, and he came over to ask for two bean burritos without cheese. And I was working on the cashier, and he was insisting that he didn't want cheese in his burritos. And somehow, like, one of the burritos had cheese, and he came back to complain. So he thought I had planted the cheese, but I was working with money. I didn't plant anything whatsoever. And he came back to complain, and he went to my manager, and he asked my manager to give me a note. And the note said, I'd like to get to know you better. Give me a call. My name is Sammy. And I came home to my cousin, who I lived with at the time, and we were laughing, and we were like, yeah, this guy left me a note. He thinks I'm going to call him. Ha, ha, ha. You know, like, I was 18. She was 25, very mature, like, age. And we decided to call him and prank him. And what was supposed to be a prank call, at that time you could prank people because nobody had caller ID. So what was supposed to be a prank call ended up being a really long call because his mom answered the phone. He lived with his mom. And crazy enough, like, I couldn't prank his mom. I felt really bad, you know? So I said to her, could I talk to Sammy? And then he ended up being such a nice guy. And 2 weeks later, we went out, and that's how it happened, thanks to Taco Bell.
Well, something that surprises me about this is that he is from the Persian Jewish community, right? And
yes.
The Persian Jewish community that I've had contact with tends to stick together. They're very religious. They marry within their community. And I was wondering if your husband is more liberal than most, first of all, because he went to Taco Bell to begin with, which isn't kosher. Even if it doesn't have cheese, it's not kosher. Right. And then the fact that he asked you out before he even knew you were Jewish, right?
Right.
So he must have been more open than the general community that he came from.
So he's from the city of Shiraz, and he came here right after the revolution, and his parents are very, very modern, very traditional. He grew up in a very traditional family, you know, like Sephardic traditional Persian families. They go to dinner Friday nights at home, and they have kiddush and hamotzi, and then they go out to dance, you know, in a discotheque and a bar. So that's the kind of way that he grew up. He didn't grow up kosher outside of the home, but he grew up kosher inside of the home. So he wouldn't have, like, say, meat or pork or shellfish outside, but he would have, you know, beans and stuff like that. So that's why he asked for 2 bean burritos without cheese. So he had his own way of keeping his own kosher. And in terms of the whole, you know, I wasn't Jewish kind of thing. I think he was very much into Latin girls, and he just wanted to go out with me. I mean, he for sure never even imagined that he was going to marry me. And his family for sure were not ever even marrying me was not in the cards whatsoever. In fact, it was not easy for them when we got engaged at all. Like, it was not easy because I'm not Persian, just like you described. His family is certainly very, very traditional, and they only marry Persians for the most part. We were probably like the first or second, he was probably the second person in the family that married non-Persian. And it was a big deal. It was a big deal. Yes.
So how did you learn about Persian food? It must have been very important when you married into the family.
It was. Well, I learned about it because, to be honest with you, very soon after we met, he brought me to his house to meet his family. And I had Persian food for the first time on Shabbat dinner. And I loved it. I really liked it. It was so, so good. And I told his mom, I really want to learn how to make this food. But, it took a long time. And, you know, I wasn't Persian. It was a little strange. We're a little lost in translation. It wasn't until I decided to move to New York, because he moved to New York in the middle of a relationship. And seven months later, I decided to move to New York too. And I told his mom, who actually used to FedEx Express, literally FedEx, frozen Persian food to him, okay, from LA to New York. How crazy is that? I told her, you know, you don't have to freeze food and FedEx it to him anymore. Like, I'm going to New York. I'm going to live there. If you teach me how to cook Persian food, I can actually send it to him. I can cook for him. So she did that. And I was so lucky because I really honestly wanted to just cook for myself. But then obviously, like, I'll give him leftovers. But that's how I learned. She taught me the most important things right there before I went to New York. So that was the secret of my Persian experience in terms of cuisine.
And then you started writing the recipes down in the book. And aside from recipes, what else is in the book?
It's a lot of the funny anecdotes and funny loss in translation moments and funny things that I lived with his family. That's why I really never thought I was going to publish this cookbook, because it's very personal. And when the whole thing happened that I was approached to publish this, I remember I told this person, the person that suggested I publish it, I said to this person, you don't understand, like, this is a very personal cookbook. My very personal stories of my mother-in-law, hilarious things about Persian culture, things that probably people should not be reading, are in this book. And then she's like, what are you talking about? People love cookbooks like that. No one wants to just cook from cookbooks. They want to put it on the night table and read it. Like, they want to really have it there and read the experience. And I was like, oh, in that case, this is probably going to be fun, because it's like a really funny book and it has like hilarious stories in there. And it also has recipes and the story, how I got the recipe and how much I suffered through it and how I made it into like an easy thing from a really complex, you know, recipe that came, you know, down from his grandmother, who used to marinate chicken legs through like for 3 days and make her own like pomegranate paste, to like very simple, easy recipes that I had to make myself because I don't have time for that, you know? So that the book is like a funny book. It's a funny, funny book, and it has a lot of really cool stories and a lot of really cool anecdotes with Persian culture. Yeah.
Do you also cook other kinds of Jewish food or just Persian?
Well, I do make some of my grandmother's recipes with eggplant. that are obviously in the family for a long time. And there's not a lot of, I do make a lot of Ashkenazi. Believe it or not, I love Ashkenazi food. I love kugel, gefilte fish. People think I'm crazy because I'm surrounded by Sephardim who gefilte fish to them is kryptonite, literally kryptonite. To me, it's delicious. I love it. So yeah, I cook a lot of other Jewish foods. I make matzo ball soup every Friday for my kids. Like they love it. I do cook a lot of and I also cook a lot of non-Jewish food, like, for example, South American Venezuelan food, or I make paella. I make kosher paella that's really good. I love that kind of stuff, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the blog and the YouTube channel. What made you start them? When did you start them? What do they contain?
So I started them a long time ago. I have to put a little bit more info in them. I have to give them a little more love. The YouTube channel is started because a lot of people are having a hard time making staples like, say, Persian rice. And, you know, the crusty bottom called tadik that goes in the bottom of the rice that everyone is fascinated by. And I wanted to show people how easy, really, really it is to make Persian food. People think it's like this hard thing or like baklava. Oh my gosh, Persian rice. It's so simple. And I just try to give people the tips on how to make it easy and how to cook for a crowd and how to. So that's really like my quest in life is like, people, you can eat Persian and make it easy too. And that's what the videos are for, to show people how easy it can be and to show people the beauty of Persian cuisine and the beauty of the culture too, and Judaism as well in it. So that's how the video came up. And then the blog is basically tips and little tricks of the trade on how to make your life more simple and how to connect to Jewish holidays through Persian cuisine and through Persian culture and what, you know, Middle Eastern Jews do, you know, for the holidays. So this is really what's all about.
We're running out of time, and I'm sorry we're running out of time because we could go on talking about this for a long time. I love cooking. But just very, very quickly, I understand you're working on a book of kosher Venezuelan food.
Yes. Yes, I am. So basically, the book is really Venezuelan food, and the recipes are going to be available in kosher versions as well. So that's what I basically, when I was talking to the people who are potentially going to be publishing it, that's what we are talking about. Because it's very easy to make an exclusive Persian cookbook that's kosher, because Persians in general don't have, you know, a lot of shellfish or pork or anything like that because they're Muslim. So most of them. But when it comes down to Venezuelan cuisine or South American cuisine, as you know, people are exposed to shellfish and pork and all kinds of really yummy things that are unfortunately not kosher. So we are basically jazzing it up and making sure that any recipe that can be changed into kosher products and all that. Like, for example, my kosher paella has fake shrimp and fake crab and all that stuff, but it literally tastes amazing. So couldn't tell. Like, and the good thing about it is that I have been exposed to both, to non-kosher and to kosher food. So if I can bring kosher customers, kosher clientele, the taste of non-kosher, the go back to like the times, especially for people who are converts or people who are Baal Teshuva, people who came back to Judaism later in life and they miss that that taste of like it used to be, but still can be made kosher. That's the best gift I can give to people, to feel like they're like having this amazing food, but yet, hey, it's kosher. So it's cool. Yes.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Reina. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.